Welcome back to Relationships Rule. What if great leadership has less to do with titles and results and more to do with whether people actually want to follow you? In today's episode, you'll hear how Mike Desjardins built a successful business by focusing on emotional intelligence, truly listening, and creating meaningful personal connections with his clients and team. Mike is the CEO of Virtus, a leadership development and strategy firm, and a leader who has spent decades helping organizations grow by developing people first. In this conversation, we talk about why listening is a leadership superpower, how small, thoughtful gestures can create lasting trust, and what it really takes to move from transactional to truly relational business. So let's dive in. Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hello, hello, Mike Desjardins. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Janice. It's a pleasure to be here.
I am so excited to have this conversation with you, Mike. I was just for my audience's sake, I want to say that I was a guest on Mike's show just recently, and it was a pleasure to be interviewed by him. He's a pro and does a super podcast. So I had to do my homework a little bit before I brought this together. But welcome to the show. And I want to just jump in and start here with this question. Out of nowhere. If leadership had nothing to do with titles or results, how would you define it based on how you live it day to day?
So if it had nothing to do with titles or results. I mean, I think the simplest thing I would say is that if you are a leader and you turn around and nobody's following you, then I might question that title.
Yes.
I think that the reality is that you're only a leader because there are people that want to go on a journey with you. And if you don't have people that trust and respect you, they're not going to want to follow the direction that you set. And I think, a lot of leaders get really focused on, what's vision and strategy. And, they want to think about all of the sort of sexier parts of leadership. And I think that emotional intelligence, things like self-awareness, empathy, social skills, self-regulation, and motivation are far more important. In fact, I would say that those are the concrete foundation over which you build every other part of your leadership. And if you can imagine building a building and you're building it on a shaky sand foundation, and then you keep building floor on floor, learning more and more skills, but then they don't work very well. And you're like, but I've learned all these things and I'm doing all the techniques, but it's shaky. It's because that concrete foundation of emotional intelligence is actually tripping the leader up. So yeah, I would say that that's the primary thing that I would look for and that we look for in leaders, because once they have that, then you can teach them a lot of other things on a very strong foundation.
That's beautiful. I love that. It's true, though, that there's some things you can't teach them. So, but there's a lot that you can if they have that strong base to begin with.
Well, and the wonderful thing about emotional intelligence, like we're born with our intelligence. It's like maybe it'll go up maximum 10 points was the latest research over our lifetime.
Yeah.
We may think we get smarter or our IQ is increasing, but the reality of what's happening is that we're having a lot of lived experiences. And when you take intelligence and you multiply it by lived experiences, you get wisdom. Now, not just the experiences, you have to reflect on the experiences. If you don't reflect, you don't learn, you don't get the wisdom. So
that's so good. You know why? This is crazy. But my husband and I play bridge.
Yeah.
I'm whispering now because they don't have to hear me.
Okay.
Not really. But we played bridge last night and we did it online and with other couples, and we didn't do very well.
Right.
And sometimes we do really well. And sometimes we just come back from vacation and we were tired, but he wanted to play. I said, okay, let's play. And we didn't do very well. And he just wants to be done with it. And I say, no, we can learn so much from why we didn't do well. Let's go through the hands and see, because it was our defensive play, because we didn't get a lot of hands. And therefore, we were in defensive mode the whole time, which we're usually good at. But for some reason, we didn't do well. So let's go back and look them over. We're
There
doing
isn't
that.
a
We're doing that tonight.
sports team alive that doesn't watch its own game tapes,
I
right?
know.
And they're looking for the errors that occurred and trying to figure out how the other team was able to take advantages of weaknesses. So
Exactly.
that's the exact thing. You've got an intelligence at bridge, but you've got learned lived experiences. And if you just stopped there, it's not good enough. You have to do the debrief where you got to reflect on what happens, and then you can actually become wiser, in
Sure.
this case,
Yes.
at bridge.
Yes.
Thankfully, emotional intelligence is actually something you can learn. So throughout our entire
Yes.
life, our emotional intelligence is growing, but you have to be very deliberate about it for it to grow. So if someone thinks they're low in empathy or low in self-awareness, these are all things that can be taught. There's lots of habits and practices you can put in place to actually grow it.
So this kind of connects to something that I saw on, I think it was on your website. I'm not going to quote the quote exactly, but it was a big quote on the page, and it was about how intentional you are in the way you build and nurture relationships, both with your clients and your team. So for those who don't know who you are yet, can you tell us a little bit about the work that you do today and who you love to serve?
And I am very intentional about relationships in all areas of my life, not just through a from a business lens. So I've got this business. It's 26 years old this year. It's called
Wow.
Virtus, and we're certified B Corp. We have been since 2018.
I noticed that. That's pretty special in this
We just
world today.
recertified, and we're at 108.4 points now. And when we first certified, we're at 83.2 points. And anyone who's listening who's in the B Corp world knows how hard it is to get
Yeah.
even like 0.1 or 0.2 of a point.
Wow.
So it's been quite the journey of us really looking at our corporate citizenship and how we show up in the world. People, planet, profits. And we do leadership development and strategic planning for medium to large enterprise organizations across North America. And that's pretty much it. It's every level of leader, from executive team, VPs, directors, managers, high potentials, and then strategies. We usually work with companies for a very long time, helping to guide their strategies, which sometimes is means a lot of growth. And of course, if you're growing really quickly, you need your leaders to also be able to keep up with that growth. Thus, leadership development supports them having lots of succession candidates internally in the organization. So that's day to day, that's what I do. And then I've got this podcast, The Mike Method, which you were on.
Yeah,
And that's kind of something fun. I think we're closing in on 100 episodes now. That was
that's
something
great.
started a year and a bit ago. So that's me.
Yeah, no, that's great. You also say that but you say something about elevating leadership, embracing life's joys, and making a meaningful impact every day. I love that. Can you unpack what that really means to you?
I mean, our purpose as the business is to make a difference in the lives of others by creating respectful, empathetic, and productive leaders who are aware of their impact on the world. And, that last statement of being aware of their impact, I always say to leaders that the higher they get in the organization, the bigger your boat gets. And the bigger your boat gets, the bigger wake that the boat creates behind it. And as a leader, you have to remember that there's all these boats that are supposed to be following in your wake. And if you don't turn around every now and then and see whether or not you're throwing water over their bows and swamping them, you don't even know how it's going. And that's where, soliciting feedback from your team is really important. A lot of leaders strive to give great feedback, like they want to learn how to be great at giving it, but they forget that just simply asking for feedback is one way that they can really improve as a leader. And that's that way of sort of turning around and asking the boats behind you, like, how am I doing? How am I doing as
Yeah,
this big super tanker with this giant wake, trying to point us in the right direction? And am I going too fast? Am I going too slow? Am I causing too much turbulence behind me that's making it much harder for you to move your boat through the water? So that analogy really, really fits to help leaders understand the concept of soliciting feedback. and how they can become more self-aware around how they're actually perceived and showing up in the world. And I can talk in a bit, if you'd like, about some simple techniques that they can use to actually solicit that feedback.
Sure, that would be great. It's funny, I was watching something last night on TV, a drama, medical drama. It was 10 o'clock. I was vigging, and the what was his title? I don't remember, but he was running this department, the internal medicine department, and he was new at the job, and he actually had been part of the hospital management team, but he, for some reason, came out of that and went back to his roots because he wanted to get hands-on again. But as a new leader there, he told his staff that, the door was open and they could come to him at any time. And a girl came to him who was a nurse who had an issue that she was very upset about, and he kind of pushed back on her because he couldn't really. It was about somebody else, another doctor that she was complaining about, and he couldn't say anything because it was confidential about what had happened. So her superior came in and stood up for her, and the minute she said how she was doing that, he came back with, "I can totally understand how you feel, and I understand." And he was so empathetic, and he was doing what he's supposed to do instead of just jumping in. And I realized that I notice that so much more now, whether it's on TV or in real life. You notice it when people do the right thing or say the right thing or acknowledge what you've said, right? And that emotional intelligence is so important.
Well, I think a lot of times when we're in conversation and people are in conflict, they think that they have to think about whether they agree or disagree with the other person. That's where the mindset goes. And the mindset that I would implore people to try is to think, no, I'm listening just purely for understanding, not for agreement. I want to understand the worldview and understand that other person's perspective. Now, I can still completely disagree with what they've said, but first I've got to seek to understand. And one of the easy ways you can do that is to repeat back approximately what the other person said. Now, if they were giving you very specific details, you'd have to be more precise in your language. But if it's just, just the act of kind of summing up what somebody says will allow them to feel heard. Now, when you share your perspective, they are more likely to listen to you because they've had an opportunity to be heard. They're now more open to what you have to say, even if it's something that they disagree with. And again, all you're seeking is understanding at that point. And the amount of conflict that can be dealt with in advance just by two people willing to just hear each other, not agree, but just hear each other first, it's quite common that, I've got position A and somebody else has got position B, but by just simply hearing each other, there's like a third position C that pops up out of nowhere that neither of us thought of as a solution or as a way forward. But because we were willing to hear each other, all of a sudden this other option just like miraculously appears.
So I'm curious, how do you find when you're working with your clients, do you notice when people are more receptive to learning that skill, or do you see people initially with their back up because that's the position they've always held, and so you have to really pull them off the, pull them over to a new position?
Well, the funny thing is, like the facilitators and the coaches don't even need to call it out because it's so obvious to everybody else in the room. So, say there was a role play happening, we'd always put a third person in to be a witness to it, to watch what's happening. And then they're taking notes, right? So they would debrief it for the other two people. They're not a leadership facilitator. They're a leader in the program, right? But just that time, they happen to be the person observing and taking notes, right? They can call it out. Like anybody can, any adult can look at a situation, even most like into, I'd say, teen years, the kids can, or even younger, can call it out and say that person's being defensive and not listening, right? Like it doesn't take an adult emotional intelligence to know when a person is just is reacting as opposed to thoughtfully responding. And so I would say that it's when people's ego gets attached to an idea, then they are more likely to be reactive. When their emotional content is quite high, they're more likely to be reactive. It's why having a disagreement over text message doesn't work, because it strips out
The
the context,
emotion.
the emotions. Like, think about how much we have here. Like, we can see each other, right? So we can see our reactions. All that's gone in a text message, and it's a large part of communication. It's like sometimes 75 plus percent of the communication or more is just the viewing the other person. So we'd say, like, text is the worst. A phone call is one step better, but if you can get on video or in person, that is the gold standard for trying to deal with any conflictual type of back and forth. You'll get to resolution faster. Now, with using the skills of being willing to listen for understanding to the person before reacting to what it is that they've had to say.
You just took me back to when I used to teach customer service skills back in the day at the telephone company, and I was a trainer. And I used to teach as part of the day long workshop was listening skills. And I always found that fascinating because and to this day, people I ask this question, they don't know what's an acronym of the word listen. Do you know?
No, I've never heard that one.
Silent.
Oh, okay.
An anagram, sorry, not an
Anagram,
acronym, an
yeah.
anagram of the words.
Anagram, silent.
Yeah,
Wow.
silent. And that's when I first read that in a book about listening, I was like blown away. These things aren't accidents, you know, like it's, yeah, you have to listen. Right. So, yeah. So that was a fun thing that you reminded me of. So, in my conversation with you on your podcast, we were talking about nurturing relationships and about appreciation and all of that. And I learned some very cool things from you that you're known for thoughtful, personalized gestures for your clients. So, where did that philosophy come from and how has it impacted your business?
It's from a very old book. It's from a very old book called Swim with Sharks,
Oh, yeah.
which is Harvey
Harvey
McKay
McKay,
from the
yeah.
McKay Envelope Company. I don't even, it's at least 40
That's not, is
years.
that the exact title?
Yeah, it's
How to
swim.
swim, how to swim with the sh no?
I think it's I think it's either how to swim with sharks without getting
Yeah,
eaten alive, I think is the
that's what it
actual
sounds
title.
right. Yeah.
And the concept in there is you can be a shark, you can be shark or bait, or you can be shark proof.
Love it.
But deeper into the book, there's this concept that he brings out about the McKay 66. And what it is it's 66 questions that you can ask another person. And if you have the answers to those 66 questions, you know them better than every single person in their life, including their siblings and their parents. And so it's and their spouse. And so it's a very cool framework. And Harvey's thing, he was very good at building relationships. It's how he
Yes, he
built his
was.
whole business. And you think he's selling envelopes. Like, how is that related, right? But he had all these really cool techniques. And I read that book when I was 18, it's a minute ago. And I decided to start to put some of those techniques into place. They're very intentional and they take a little bit of work. But that then led to when we got this business going to a discussion around how we wanted to recognize people. And so we're just really good at in listening for cues about important events in people's lives and then coming up with something unique that fits for them, that fits either their hobby or sports team they like, you know, something for their kids. Like we're just that's just how we roll here. But it's also just how I've been since, you know, at a very young age. And it really matters to people. Like, I think, you know, everybody sends, you know, their clients gift baskets and stuff at Christmas, right? So I get a ton of those every year. And which is great. And I'm super grateful for them. What I find really interesting is when you can send something that's unattached to a holiday, but is attached to either a meaningful event to the client or to somebody that's in my world, and for it to be personalized as well, something that's unique that
Shows that you
matters to them.
listened, shows that you listened to them
Yeah.
and that you were paying attention and how thoughtful of you.
Well, and it's the thing is, you don't have to ask a lot of questions. Like if you
No,
read
you don't.
the Harvey McKay 66, the questions are like, where did you go to college? Where did you go to elementary school? How many
You know
kids
how
do you
that's
have?
translated now somewhat? If you look really closely at somebody's LinkedIn profile.
Oh yeah, there's so much about, or their Instagram, like Facebook. There's so many ways to find out
Well,
about.
I don't trust Instagram to
Oh, you
be.
don't? Okay.
Well, it's very pretty in most cases, and you don't know if that's the real thing in some people's cases, but that's
It's
just me
more,
being old, I guess. I don't
yeah,
know.
I think it's more that if you saw them canoeing in more than one photo
Well,
in different
yeah, of
locations, it's like,
course.
oh, okay, the person likes canoeing.
Of course,
What's the
yes.
coolest thing that's out in canoeing right now, right? So it doesn't take very long to jump online or even ask
Exactly.
ChatGPT, what's the coolest thing in canoeing? And then find a gift that's super unique to send to them that maybe even their closest friends hadn't even considered sending to them. So it's not a lot of work, but that's the thought process. The other
Absolutely.
thing is even just articles. Like I text people, I use Flipboard for this, but I follow a ton of blogs. And if ever I come across an article or a blog post or like a YouTube video or whatever, as I'm flipping, I'll look at it and I'll say, oh, you know who would really like this? Like my mentor loves motorcycles and cars, right? So if there's anything cool coming up about motorcycles and cars, I'm like, oh, I thought of him. So I'll flip it over to him, right? Another one of my mentors is really big into creating things in art, and he's also written five detective novels that are published. So, you know, they're all set in Kauai in Hawaii. Like, so, you know, the more that you're just sort of paying attention and asking questions, just out of plain curiosity, what's your dog's name? What kind of dog is it? Right. Like these things just sort of people will share a ton of information if you're curious and you just ask. And it's just normal human conversation where I think in a lot of meetings, people are like, we're here to meet with this agenda and we're going to cover all these things. We don't let any meetings start in our company until we do a proper check-in about how everybody's doing, what happened on the weekend, what they did this morning. And we set the tone for the meeting. So, my first meeting this morning, we said, how's everybody doing? And they said, how are you? And I'm like, I'm great. I said, I got on the Peloton this morning, which was super fun. I needed to move our car because the driveway is getting, or the garage is getting power washed. I needed to get the dog out because my wife was going to her exercise class. But like, everything's done. I did it all. I'm here. I'm ready to roll. So what that does is instead of somebody then replying next and saying, like, how was your morning? They're not going to say good because now that feels trite. So they're going to say, oh, well, I'm actually, the client was like, I'm actually in Toronto. My husband's doing an MBA right now. So I'm here for the week so that I can hang out with him while he's doing it. But I'm also learning a lot from it. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Right. And so, you know, it's then because I mentioned that my dog was sleeping on the chair behind me, then the other client was like, oh, I've got a dog too. We just got her in January. And so, you know, that type of personal connection will take us sometimes. I mean, my record is 55 minutes of an hour long meeting. And the client said to me, oh my God, I have a meeting in 5 minutes. And my job there in the meeting was to present to her a $250,000 proposal.
My
And I
God.
hadn't done it yet. And so she said to me, is it everything we talked about last time? I'm like, it's everything we talked about. The prices as we've agreed, I've just written it all out. She's like, then I'm good to go. Just send it to me and I'll sign it.
Love it.
And so I tell that story to the team because I think a lot of people would be anxious in that situation thinking, I gotta present this proposal. But the human side of us wants to work with people we like, trust, and respect.
That's a
Full
great story, a
stop.
fabulous story. Yeah, exactly. Because she trusts you enough to know you're going to do what you say you're going to do. And that to me is my thing. You've got to do what you say you're going to do and more probably. But yeah, that's beautiful. Did you know that you'd taken that the con or you were just both just drawn into the conversation and
Yeah,
neither?
we were just drawn into the conversation and then lost track of time. We were on Zoom, and it was the client that actually said, "Oh my God, I have to go in 5 minutes." And
But has
so,
she been a client before?
no, not
Oh, it was a
yet.
new client.
Yeah,
I love it.
but we got to know each other through this process, right? Of putting this deal together, and we hadn't worked with the company or worked with her, and so. And originally she said, we're probably going to have to go to RFP. But then we spent 9 months getting to know each other, which is why we were chatting like this,
Yes,
right?
yes.
And this was the day for me to present this proposal. So like I literally pulled it up on the screen and I'm like, it's everything we talked about. And she's like,
Yeah.
okay, great.
I love it.
And then we
That's
both got to our meetings early. We didn't even take 5 minutes to do it. And she and I laugh about that. And we both tell the story because we're like, well, at the end of the day, like she and I and our teams were going to work together. And we'd built up this trust over time. And so, was it important for us to go through all the nuances of everything? No, she could read it when I sent it to her. So, you know,
Yeah.
she was fine with that. And it was everything that I said it was going to be in there. And the team had put everything together. And so, yeah, it got signed and we started the work and had a wonderful relationship with that client. They were a big hotel client chain. And then they ended up buying a whole bunch more hotels. And so then we ended up, you know, growing the program. It went on for a number of years. So.
That's a great story. So let's go back to what you offered to talk about.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I
The
want to hear.
soliciting
Yeah.
feedback thing. Okay, well, so one of the things is we tell leaders, you know, you need to solicit feedback. And they're
Yeah.
like, "So, like how am I doing?" I'm like, "No, that won't get an answer." So what there's two simple ways. So, one simple way is to say, "What am I doing too much of? What am I doing not enough of? And what's just right in how I'm showing up as a leader for you?"
Papa bear, mama bear, and baby bear.
Baby bear, yeah. And what's interesting is that people will sometimes not respond right away because they're kind of like, what are you going to do with this when I tell you, sort of thing. And so it sometimes takes a while of asking that question before people give you a meaningful response. The key is that you then have to repeat back what they said, like write down or type out what they said. And then you can then say, can I or can I not do something about that? Because maybe they've given you feedback about, hey, I want to have our meetings, our one-on-ones at 8 o'clock in the morning. It would be better for me. And you're like, and the leader's like, well, I have to drive my daughter to school, so I can't, but I could do it at 8:45. Would that be okay? And they're like, yeah, that's great. So it, you know, it doesn't mean you have to exactly do the thing. It's just feedback, right? It's like wine tasting. You can kind of like taste it, swirl around together, spit it out, or you can swallow it. It's your choice, right? The other way is you can say, hey, in our relationship, in terms of how I'm doing as a leader, what's working well, what needs improvement, and what's missing in terms of how I'm showing up for you. And I put these questions into my one-on-ones, and I ask the leaders, I do one-on-ones weekly with the leaders here, and I ask them every week those questions. And sometimes they're like, I don't have anything. I'm like, okay, cool. And sometimes they're like, yeah, this worked. This is working really
This
well for
is
me.
leaders in your company.
Yeah, my direct reports. Sorry. Yeah,
That's
leaders in my
okay.
company. Yeah. So we teach leaders those two methodologies because they're so easy to remember. And you just pick the one that you like. But the thing is, you have to consistently ask those questions, and then you've got to be willing to respond and take action. Now, you might say, ooh, I need to sit with that and then come back next time you're together to say, hey, I've thought about it, your feedback, and this is what I think I can do. You know, so it's not like you have to react in the moment. You just need to be responsive in some way. You can't just let the feedback hang. And one of the best compliments I've gotten from direct reports is the thing I like about giving you feedback, Mike, is that you listen, you take it in, and then you actually respond and do something about it. Then you come back to me and say, hey, I've been trying to do this differently because I know it's important to you. How's that going for you? And they're like, you even check back to see how it's going for me with your change in behavior. So that's the kind of like, that's the like secret little extra sauce, if you're going to put sprinkles on top, is to come back after you've practiced it for a while and ask your direct report, like, how am I doing? I'm trying to do this differently. Like, how are you finding this change in me? So that they can give you positive reinforcement that the changes that you're making are actually improving the relationship that the two of you have.
Totally. And I think you probably answered this question already because this is what I was going to say. What have you learned about trust when it comes to giving your team the autonomy you give them in choosing those gifts back when we were talking about, if somebody's got an idea to send their client they're working with a special gift and you give them autonomy pretty much to make that decision, those decisions. But as you're doing this feedback thing, which I think is brilliant, you're building your tr the trust between you so well. I mean, I would think that, you're not getting awards from major things that say this is the best company to work for, but it could be the best company to work for, right? Like, yeah, I mean, those are the things that help build the culture that makes people want to stay, right?
To answer your question around the gifts, the rule of thumb is if it's under $250, I don't need to approve it. So you just do it and let me know, not because I want to approve it, because I just want to know in case the client writes me and says, thank you so much for I want to know what it is we
Of
sent,
course. Yeah,
right?
of
But I
course.
mean, I'll give you an example. Like one of our clients was going on, she just got married and she was going away on her honeymoon. And so the person on my team said, like, where are you going? And she's like, oh, I'm going to Tofino. And she's like, oh, cool. I love Tofino. Where are you and your new husband going to be staying? And she's like, oh, we're staying at the Long Beach Lodge. And she's like, oh, so that's a beautiful property, right? And then that was it. This is maybe like months, 3 months before she got married. And she was just excited that she managed to book the Long Beach Lodge. And so we didn't say another thing about it. But what we did was when she and her husband arrived in the hotel room, there was a bottle of champagne and chocolate dipped strawberries sitting in the hotel room with a card from us saying, congratulations on your wedding. Have an amazing honeymoon. Love your friends at Virtus. And she called us and was like, I didn't get anything from the company I work for, but I'm your client and I don't even know how you pulled this off. I don't even know how you know I was staying at the Long Beach Lodge, but this is the nicest thing. There was nothing else. We didn't get anything else on the honeymoon. It was the only thing we received was from your team. And you know, I think the bottle of champagne was, I think it was $150 maybe, and the strawberries were another 50. So for like $200, the client and the person that was getting married were part of a $300,000 contract for us. So do I need to approve $200, you know, right, for a $300,000? No. Like, and that story, I'm sure, got told by the bride to by an umpteen number of people, right? So we don't do it for that. We don't do it because it's like a marketing rap. We do it because we care about people. We're great to be in relationship with. One of the things our clients get to experience is that our team and their team become a team, and it's so much fun. Like my favorite compliment from our clients, one of them said to in a meeting recently, she's like, I know our meeting was supposed to be half an hour, and I know we're closing in on an hour. I don't want to do anything else on my schedule today, so I'm dragging out our conversation because the meetings with your team are the most fun I get to have all week. And I know why, because the people on our team are super fun to be in relationship with. So it's something we hire for. We hire for people that are great to be in relationship, that are great at collaboration, great at empathy, and they care a lot. So they do things like sending champagne and strawberries. Like another client was off on a baby moon. And the client had a NFL team that she really loved. And so we bought a tiny NFL hat and like a baby onesie, and a bunch of other swag that was all baby related, but it was all for her very favorite, I think it was Kansas City, very favorite football team. And we sent that to her before her mat leave.
I love it. Yeah, it's fun to be creative and things like that. That's amazing. So many businesses fall into being transactional. What's your advice for leaders who want to shift towards more meaningful relationship-driven interactions?
I think the first thing is to, at the very beginning of the relationship, before they're even a client, to not thinking about closing the deal. Because if the company is just focused on closing the deal, then it really feels transactional to the client. That's not great. You want to think about this is the beginning of a long-term relationship. And if I think about, hey, you know, with our clients, the like one of the longest standing clients, I think we're on year 18. So imagine if I didn't know that, right? And we're starting and I treated it like transactional, and now we've been in business together for 18 years. Like it would be weird. And so I think the first thing is, as a leader, is to think, hey, just like I might work with the people that I work with every day, and I should probably get to know them and know more about them as human beings. The same thing is true about our clients, that we could be in business together, hopefully for a long time. When you think about the cost of acquisition of a new client, it's very
Right.
high. But then
Yeah.
flip it around to the client. The client has a very high cost of switching. So if you're their partner and they have to switch, there can be quite a high cost for them to switch. So both of you should have, an incentive to creating a
Right.
long-term relationship. The other reason is that there's bumps in the roads in relationships with clients. Like, stuff happens. Either they make a mistake or we make a mistake. It doesn't actually happen that often, but when it does, the stronger the relationship you have, the easier it is for you to come up with a solution that works for everybody, and the less does it feel adversarial. If it's transactional, then when bumps in the road come along, all of a sudden it feels adversarial, and you're saying, well, the contract says this and the contract says that. I can tell you right now, if you devolve to the level of what the contract says, the relationship has been broken for a while. And if instead you say, yeah, I know we did this contract, but like, also, what's the right thing to do? And you get a couple of people together and they have that relational approach, then all of a sudden it's like, imagine there's, I mean, if people are watching this on a video, then you'll see my hands doing this. But if you're listening to this podcast, imagine that there's two people on either side of a boardroom table. And in the center is the problem. And you're batting the problem back and forth, right? That's how most of these situations kind of devolve. So instead, imagine you're both sitting on the same side of the table and the problem's in the center of the table. And now you're both looking at it, trying to figure out how to solve the problem, but you're not competing because you're not
You're on the
smashing
same.
the problem back and forth. You're just both sitting on the same type of the table, contemplating how you're going to fix it. That's the difference between relational leadership and transactional leadership. And so who would want to be in the first position I described, where you're batting it back and forth, right? It doesn't sounds icky. It sounds like it's full of conflict, right? It sounds like it could damage the relationship further, no matter what the outcome is, where the relational approach will most likely strengthen the relationship.
I love it. It sounds so simplistic and easy, but people make things like that very complicated.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just switch to lightening it up a little bit. But I
Yeah,
do, and
sure.
my first question isn't quite as light as the other ones,
Okay.
but I feel like I have to ask it because
Yeah.
we've talked about, well, it is, it, but we've talked about it, and it's my favorite thing is curiosity.
Yeah.
And you say it very easily as well as I do. You just have to be curious. You just have to ask the questions. A lot of people aren't, right?
Yeah.
And my question for you is, that I ask a lot of my clients is, do you think that curiosity is innate or learned? And part two is, what are you most curious about these days?
Okay, so this is a great question. I think that curiosity is innate. And anybody who doesn't believe me, just go find a toddler and bring up any topic and then see how many whys you get back, especially at like six, yeah, 5 to 7 years old. See how many whys you get back to a point where you're like, I don't know how to answer that last why, right? So I think we're all born with innate curiosity. I think schools are doing a better job today than they did in the past of helping to foster that curiosity. But I think for a couple generations, it was sort of beaten out of us in school. Curiosity is absolutely something that people can learn. I think today we would call it a growth mindset, but that sounds like an overly complicated way of saying just be more curious in life.
Yeah, just ask questions.
Yeah. And I think, innately, we think our ego tells us we should have an opinion about everything and we should then make a statement about it. And I think I would flip the script, which instead is to say, why not just ask more questions instead? And when somebody gives you an answer, like, get more curious and ask them the next question. There's always like another question that you
I
can.
agree. I agree.
Yeah.
And
Like,
yeah, although you see,
yeah.
one of my daughters will say, "Mom, just stop asking questions. You ask too many questions."
Well, here's the thing you can reply to your daughter. Questions tell you that I care.
Yeah, I know.
Because, the act of asking a question is opening up a possibility for the other person to share their knowledge with you. And Plato has this wonderful quote. I can't remember the exact quote, but basically it's like, you can't learn anything while you're speaking. So Right. So if you want to learn, you've got to be willing to ask questions, and you've got to be willing to look dumb sometimes. And looking dumb is really just saying, like, I don't know about this subject, so I'm just curious and I want to learn from you. You think you're looking dumb, but the other person actually feels great about their ability to share their knowledge with you. So they're not thinking about you, they're just feeling great about the fact that they can share with you.
Right.
That's what their experience is on the other side.
Beautiful. Okay, so and what are you most curious about these days?
I'm most curious right now about the move. There's sort of three parts to AI. There's AI that is big data. So we have a lot of data sets, and right now we use a lot of report writers and reporting systems to analyze that data. I'm really curious to see how business systems can shift and change, and leaders can start thinking about using AI for large data sets as opposed to Excel spreadsheets, for instance. Like, for instance, ChatGPT and Claude can both be embedded into Excel, and Gemini is already embedded into Google Sheets. So the technology is there to do these things. And I think the other one is using AI to build out systems.
That's what I'm
So
curious about right now.
yeah, and so you'll hear a lot right now about OpenClaw. You'll hear a lot about Claude Cowork. And those tools are, they're sometimes called agentic, that basically they're like AI agents. And so what you're doing is you're building a business system that makes something really efficient, but it's something you do all the time. And so you want an AI to do this thing that we might have purchased software to do in the past. And then the third part of it is AI relative to like the normal prompting, right? Where you go into ChatGPT or Claude and then you like type in a request and it gets back to you. If leaders aren't already using AI every single day, I think they're missing on everything. Like, I would say to start as a leader, to start your day and think, what can I get done with AI today? And the thing is, you don't even have to know how to use it, because you literally can go to ChatGPT and say, I don't know how to do the task using AI. And then the AI will
We'll
tell
teach you.
you how to do the thing. So a lot
I
of people are like,
know.
well, I'm not sure of the perfect prompt. I'm like, well, then ask the AI to tell you how to do it. And I've even gone through a whole thing with AI and then said, hey, now that you know the outcome I was trying to shoot for, what should I have asked you like 10 minutes ago? And it's like, well, you should have just said this. And I'm like, okay, perfect. Well, now I know, right, for the future. We use a shared team GPT or ChatGPT. We use lots of different AIs, but we use Notebook LM, we use Gemini, we use Claude, and we use ChatGPT here. With ChatGPT, we have a team version. So what it enables us to do is share projects where we're all working on something together, and we can all build off each other's prompts and each other's work. And then we've also started creating GPTs, which we use externally, which people can then use. But I would say that's the thing I'm most curious about and spend most of my time contemplating, is how leaders need to adapt how they show up as a leader in an AI environment on a daily basis, how they need to be thinking about business processes to shift the systems by using agents. And then on the third case, how do they think about large data sets? And the person who taught me this framework is Rob Lamoore, who's the VP of IT at Cactus Club. And he did a presentation describing this brilliantly. And I'm like, yeah, those are the three things that we need to be
Oh,
talking about
interesting.
as leaders.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Oh, that's good. Well, this has been fascinating. A couple of quick questions I wanted to ask you.
For sure.
How do you mostly get your information these days? Do you read? Do you watch videos? Do you listen? Which is your go-to?
I read. I'm a prolific reader, so I love reading. I also love listening to audiobooks. It just depends on what the topic is. If it's something that I know I'm going to need to take a lot of notes on, then I probably not use an audiobook, because I tend to listen to audiobooks while I'm walking the dog or walking around downtown
So,
Vancouver.
do you read novels as well as
Yeah, I
business books?
do. Yeah, I love spy novels. That's my genre. So I read novels, I read business books, and I read books that are more on the like like stoicism, like philosophy and personal development type
Okay.
work. Stoicism be the one that I study the most, I would say. And then I watch YouTube videos because there's so much knowledge on YouTube. It's like anything I want to know how to do, some smarty pants has produced a video about it, so might as well just go watch that. And then I actually use ChatGPT as my learning tool like all the time because it is so incredible. And if you haven't used voice mode yet on ChatGPT or on Claude, it's basically just turn on voice mode and you just talk back and
I
forth
know,
with
you
it
have a
like it's a
conversation with
person.
it, right?
Yeah,
I
and you
know.
can interrupt it and it
I know.
stops and corrects itself. And so I have these massive conversations going on, right, using
Yeah,
AI.
I've done
And
that too. Yeah.
it's really helping me to learn. And then I learn from people. I learn from really smart people because at the end of the day, I think a lot of business leaders will think, what's the problem and how do I solve it?
Yeah.
That's not the order. The order is what's the problem and who already knows how to do this or who can help me fix this?
Yeah,
That's it.
because you don't have to go deep as deep anymore. You
Why
just have
would
to
you do the
find.
how if everybody else already knows how to do, or somebody else already knows how to do it? Just skip the how step, go straight to who, and think about who can help you with it.
That's too good. It's too good. I did want to ask one closing question.
Please.
If there's one thing that you hope that leaders take away about building relationships and making an impact, what would it be? Oops.
One thing I would want them to take away. That leaders spend a lot of time, or some leaders will spend a lot of time. I'm going to use another boat analogy, if that's okay.
Sure.
We'll spend a lot of time worried about the boat, right? They're like, I'm the boat, so I need to go get an MBA, which is to get a new coat of paint and a new engine. And like, I need to be constantly learning and growing, which I think is great. All those things are great. But if you want to your boat to float higher in the water, only the tide will fix that. And the tide is your team. So if you want to put time into development, actually focus on your team because the stronger and better the team is, the more you're going to rise up as a leader. The more, Steve Jobs has this wonderful quote. He says, you don't hire smart people to tell them what to do. You hire smart people so they'll tell you what to do. So if the team below you don't think can come after your job, you've got to develop them, or you've got to find people that scare you. Like they've got to be that good. And then you got to spend time figuring out where their path is and focus on developing them. That will give you so much free time, so much white space. And for most leaders, there's two or three things that only they can do. And the more time they spend on those things, the more leverage the organization gets. They only get to spend that time when they're not having to fix things and be in meetings and micromanage tasks and people,
Right.
right? So the more they can build their capacity of their team up, the more it frees them up. The excuse is always, well, it's quicker if I do it. Cool, but it's not quicker
Yeah.
if you do it forever. It's quicker
Right.
if you teach somebody, it's slower. But once you've taught them, you don't have to do it anymore. Now they've developed and you've gotten time to work on the things that really drive leverage for your organization and your role. So that's the one thing I would leave everybody with.
That brings so many more questions to me, but I have to stop. So I'll have to do it again. Thank you so
Yeah.
much.
Thanks for your time, Janice.
I
It's a
really
pleasure.
appreciate your perspective. I appreciate your perspective on what it means to elevate leadership, to truly listen, and to create thoughtful, lasting connections in business. I mean, I really believed the first time that you and I spoke that we were on the same page. And, I really love your attitude and your perspective on things. So thank you. Thank you for being here.
Course.
And appreciate your time and all your wisdom. So, to my audience, I hope that you like what you heard. Mike, they can find you at Virtus.
Virtusinc.com, VirtusInc.com, VirtusInc.com. And then my name is as well,
Yeah.
MikeDesjardins.com. So
Sure.
MikeDesjardins.com. That's my personal website. So that has the podcast and a bunch of different stuff about who I am. But the company
Right.
website is Virtusinc.com. So
And of course, you're on LinkedIn.
I'm on LinkedIn. Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn and I'm
Yeah.
pretty easy to find online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you again so much. And
Yeah.
remember to my audience, please, if you like what you heard, check out Mike's information. He's a great guy and knows a lot of good stuff. And remember to stay connected and be remembered. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener, because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.